Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
This presentation is proudly sponsored by Plimovent. Plimovent is a driving force in advancing firefighter health and safety. Plimovent's diesel exhaust removal systems feature virtually 100% source capture to eliminate diesel exhaust from your firehouse. Plimovent diesel exhaust removal systems meet the requirements stated in the Fire Act Grant Program Guidance for Modifications to Facilities and have been recognized as a high priority in this year's grants. Visit www.plimovent.com or click the link on this page to learn more about their exhaust removal systems.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is part two of the 2009 Assistance to Firefighter Grants podcast. We have a podcast roundtable today with several folks who have been awarded grant money in the past, and most of them have received several awards. So I'd like to thank the following participants for joining us. We have Brian Vickers, who's going to be the host. Brian's the Firehouse.com grants contributor, and he'll take the show over here in a minute. We have Ken Gilliam from St. Paul, Minnesota, Fire and Life Safety, Brian Jeffers from Kentucky, and Bert Sabo, the chief of the Ventnor City, New Jersey Fire Department. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate the feedback that you give us, and you know, we'd like to encourage all departments who have the opportunity to apply for the grant to do that. We'll also provide some links at the bottom of the podcast player page. The closing for this year's grant program is Wednesday, May 20th at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this year's grant has been allotted $510 million. So please do whatever you can to make sure your department does get the nomination in. And Brian Vickers, thank you for hosting this show.
Thank you, Pete. I'd like to welcome everybody as well. And again, my thanks to the three gentlemen we've got on the call. Just for our listeners, we've done this before in the past, but what we try and do is basically get a half-decent sampling of people from around the country who've been writing their own grants and for various projects, and really get the success side of the program. You know, we still tend to see when people get turned down, they get sour towards the program, or you know, have different perceptions about you know who's getting funded and why, and things like that. So we do have a half-decent sampling. And certainly these gentlemen have done a good job, an excellent job, actually, of bringing some grant money in for their various organizations. So I guess we'll work east from west. Chief Bert Sabo, the Ventnor City, New Jersey Fire Department, we appreciate you coming out. Why don't you give us a little background on yourself and on the department and just what you've seen yourself from the grants that you guys have done over the past couple of years.
My name is Bert Sabo. I've been 33 years in the fire department. I've been chief for the last 4 years. My city is it's situated on a barrier island. We border Atlantic City, New Jersey, and some of the problems that we run across, you know, with the casino gambling coming in there. There's a huge influx of people throughout the year that go in there. We suffer from not being able to get any. Money from the Casino Redevelopment Authority. It either goes to Atlantic City or goes offshore or North Jersey. So we've tried to reach out and get as much help as possible from the AFG or any place. I have applied for multiple grants, you know, each year. Sometimes I'm lucky. Sometimes, you know, we miss out or whatever. I just feel that there are so many fire departments out there in the same boat as me, that and money is tough, that we're all trying to do this. And what you have to find out is what sets your city apart from everybody else and, you know, work it from there. Tell a good story, be short and sweet, and what makes your department special from your neighboring department, and tell a good story, and what makes you peculiar also. What, you know, the casino gambling is one thing that I play up on, the fact that we're surrounded by the ocean and the bay, and my mutual aid companies, you know, even though we border these towns, they're still 5 to 7 miles off on a causeway to come and help me. So we have relied on our neighboring departments and whatever help we can get.
Has that been something you've keyed on a lot? We get a lot of people that run a lot of they're basically in resort areas, for lack of, or tourist-type areas, for lack of a better term, that have a very low residential population. What's the difference between your permanent residence and maybe a peak summer situation?
Okay, currently we have about between 12 and 13,000 people. Summertime will go to 40,000. The biggest problem I have here is, if you're familiar with any of the Barrier Islands, Atlantic City to Ocean City, Maryland, whatever, the proximity of the structures are so close. I mean, I'm lucky if I've got a 6-foot separation between some of my buildings. So, and I, with the because of how Atlantic City developed, Venner became a bedroom community for Atlantic City. So I've got a lot of apartment buildings, 4- or 5-story apartment buildings, high rises, multifamily occupancies. So it's and then with casino gambling coming in, what we went from, when I first came on in 77, we, you know, in the wintertime, once Labor Day came, man, it got real quiet and nothing was happening. Once casino gambling came in, we're 24-hour-a-day kind of business that just runs constantly. And the farther you get away from Atlantic City, the kind of slower it gets in the neighboring departments. But we're pretty active. Plus, we do our EMS. So between EMS and fire, last year we did 3,400 calls, so it's pretty respectable for a small department.
Yeah, definitely. We've got Assistant Chief Brian Jeffers from W.R. Castle, eastern side of Kentucky. Why don't you give us a little background on your area? And we were talking before we started recording about some of the things you guys have been facing out there, which certainly not something that Chief Sabo would run into in terms of wildland calls there.
Yeah, we're an all-volunteer department. We run, in a nice normal year, we're running around 135, 140 calls in a year. But with the ice storm from January and this little surge of wildland activity here in the last week, we're already around 120 for the year right now. So it's been kind of an exceptional year, and that would remind me of the comment that Chief Sabo made that you need something to show what is unique about your situation. You need an angle that makes you stand apart from everybody else that is applying for the same thing that you are. What is your financial situation that's unique? What is your staffing, your environmental situation, whatever it is, what is unique for you? But a little more about our department. As I said, we're all volunteer, running out of two stations with about 40 firefighters on the department. We run three engines, a tanker, and a rescue. We've got another example of one thing that kind of sets us apart is that we do sit on, we cover 10 miles of United States Highway 23, the nation's busiest coal hauling highway. We're in eastern Kentucky, a lot of coal mined in the adjacent counties, and nearly all of it is hauled through our county on the way to the Ashland area, to the docks and so forth. Power plants and that kind of thing are all down that way. We're funded by a fire fee of a flat $23 per property, which means if you live in a million-dollar mansion, you pay us $23. If you live in a rundown trailer, you pay us $23. There's a political atmosphere here that people don't like the T word, so when it became a fee, that was all right, even though it's not exactly an equitable funding system, and it's really not that great for us either. We have almost no commercial or industrial in our district, so we're dealing almost exclusively with residential. Our funding, we do, with the fire fee, we bring in $22,000 to $23,000 a year. The county has another $8,000 in the budget, and then we receive a little over $8,000 in state aid, and then we still do a good old-fashioned fundraising booth at a festival here each fall, and that brings us about $8,000 last year. We've gone through a lot of different grants over the years, and as I sat and compiled a list of what we've been successful in getting, it feels pretty good, but you have to remember that the list of the ones we didn't get is even longer, and I think that's the message we need to send to people. I can assure you that you're not going to get 100% of what you apply for, but you will get 0% of what you don't apply for. And, you know, if you're getting a 15 or 20% success rate, you're doing quite well by anybody's standards, and so it just takes persistence and going after those grants, and we've got an attitude at our department that we're never finished. We never say, okay, we're good enough. There's really not anything we need to do. We're always looking ahead to the next challenge and, related to that, looking for the funding source for the next challenge. There's always a truck that needs to be replaced down the road. There's always a station project or communications equipment that's getting outdated, whatever the case may be. And so we've just always tried to keep that attitude that that something else is coming down the road and we need to be prepared for it.
Yeah. Yeah, when everything's got a limited lifetime, we're definitely not out of the woods at any point, because at some point it's going to get worn down and NFPA is going to want us to get a new set.
Right.
We've got Ken Gilliam from St. Paul Fire Department in Minnesota, certainly one of the larger cities we've talked to. You guys have done a lot, and you guys certainly have a lot of challenges, too. That's what I run into a lot, and people looking at the big cities wondering how they get grants. Certainly you've probably got the same issue that Chief Sabo has. You know, you guys have everybody wonders and looks at your budget and sees a lot of zeros and commas and then forgets that everybody likes to take home a paycheck, so certainly payroll is an issue in some of the larger departments. What else have you seen from your perspective up in your area? Because you mentioned that you've also done some other grants from some other departments in both Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Brian. I think you hit on a couple of the big ones. I've been with St. Paul for about 5 years. I've been in the fire service for about 17. Just for geographically, St. Paul's capital, Minnesota, we side by side with Minneapolis, which is the larger of the two cities. And then we're surrounded by lots of smaller cities with not a lot of strong annexation rights in Minnesota. So in Ramsey County alone, where I'm at, there's 14 different fire departments, I believe, and lots of some full-time but predominantly volunteer and combination staff departments, a lot of interoperability issues, and just as our industry's been getting stressed with that. Done well with the fire grants at St. Paul since I came on there. We've hit four or five of them, I believe, and I just would echo comments like you guys. I think persistence pays, and a lot of what we're going to talk about today. As far as my grant writing efforts for other departments, I have been writing for a lot of our neighbors, just people that I interact with, and same sort of deal. I probably proofread three times as many as I actually write, and you get that network built up of people that are involved and sharing information and looking at how you can make yours better. And I think, you know, podcasts like this, looking at other departments' grants, and, you know, don't reinvent the wheel. If you see something that's working somewhere, you know, steal it or borrow it or do what you need to do, but make it work for your department. As far as our challenges, being a capital city, you know, there are a lot of commas and zeros. We run about a $50 million budget, but we're still in the, I think, 88% of that is salary. We got about 416 sworn firefighters. And it's the biggest problem we've had lately is just the budgets that are kind of trickling down from the federal and the state governments. The last few years we've been really challenged with a lot of state cuts to aid to local cities. St. Paul's taken some just significant multi-million dollar hits, which is affecting budgets. And, of course, training and equipment are the first things to get slashed off the budgets, as is similar with most departments. So we've been really challenged by that, just the declining tax base inside the inner city rings, compiled with these the cities constantly getting their budget slashed by the states, and that reluctance to raise taxes is alive and well in Minnesota as it is in Kentucky. So we're rolling with it, and it's just, you know, what can we do to make things better? And I think if, as departments are looking for ideas, that's typically what I've done in all my departments that I've worked with or been on, is, you know, pull the guys on the street. What would make your job safer or better? And, you know, you're kind of surprised by some of the ideas they have, and, you know, you go for it. You do some shotgun approaches, and you try and tie it all together. And, you know, like I said, sometimes you get lucky, and you just keep at it. So I'll turn it back over to you, Brian.
Yeah, thanks. Speaking of, I mean, obviously anybody that's got a TV or radio knows all about the economy going down and fiscal shortfalls. And even with the stimulus money coming in a lot of states, it's, you know, the usual when any kind of money goes down, it gets dysfunctional, and it's a who-you-know kind of system and doesn't always filter down everywhere. Certainly, Chief Sabo, as you mentioned, when the casino industry, it certainly semi-helped your area with, you know, people moving in and residents and things along those lines. But now, as you know, that's faltered a little bit, and probably people are stepping back a little away from gambling. are you facing any budget cuts and, you know, going into the next grant cycle, since we are starting with the AFG now and, of course, going through the rest of them, even down to the station grants? Have you had any resistance about from your politicians or about dealing with the grants or having them even look at the, you know, not wanting to spend the share money? Because, I mean, you guys are, you know, only 13,000 residents, only a 5% match, and we've got a lot of departments whose municipalities won't let them even go in for a grant, just seeing how much money they'd have to spend versus how much money they'd actually save. Have you run into any issues along those lines?
The only, you know, it's how you sell it, too. And it's kind of hard when I talk to my mayor, you know, we're trying to go for an engine. It's like, it's a no-brainer. If you're going to pay 5% and we can come up with a $300,000 engine, you know, you really should be going for this. The only resistance I had was with the SAFER grant. A previous commission let me put in for a SAFER grant. The only problem I have with it is like a poison pill. You know, you get it, it's great, you can bump up your manpower, but then, you know, at the end of the 5 years, it's hard for the city to swallow that they're going to take this whole amount. So if that could be done a little bit differently on the federal level, I know that they've changed it and they're now giving you like $112,000 in a lump sum, however you want to spend it. But again, as Ken had mentioned, you know, the payroll is where the majority of my money goes. So to come up with some kind of plan for getting extra equipment, the city's kind of been on board with this from the get-go. You know, that said, you know, my budget has been cut this year. We were almost to the point of furloughs and layoffs, and we had to give up a lot of stuff. And so my manpower is safe on that point. But I know a lot of departments throughout the country and even in my area are not in the same boat. So I think it's how you sell it to the to your politicians. And the other problem that I have is I'm fairly, like I explained to my mayor, I'm fairly needy. I need a lot of stuff. My stuff is old. It's falling apart. So it was, you know, even going when I got the turnout gear grant or the hose, it was, you know, when you're saying most of your gear is 10 plus years old, 15 years old, and my call volume's up there, it wasn't hard to defend your project, and it's not hard to defend it with the politicians either.
Yeah, certainly it's. We've used that tactic a couple times. You know, just the negotiations, kind of like you do in the grant. It's you need it. It's going to cost 100%. Do you want to pay 5 or do you want to pay 100? Because we can find somebody to help pay 90 or, you know, 80, 90 or 95. And I have run into that a lot in SAFER. Even quite a few people that were awarded. I believe it was about 25 people. 25 departments that did get awarded in the 2008 program. They were up for it, and by the time when they applied, things were looking good. 6-7 months later, at the end of 2008, all of a sudden the economy changed, and now people had to turn it back because of that financial outlook and the cuts in state aid.
Absolutely, and I think the other problem that I have is because I'm a small department, I've got 45 men. I mean, I'm running 8 men on. You know, I'm nowhere near any kind of NFPA standard. But it's what we can support. And when you try to go and you write your SAFER grant and, you know, it's going to bring up the NFPA standard? No, it's not. But, you know, in a small department, we look at 1 and 2 men as a huge amount on a platoon level. So it's hard to make that sell on the federal level.
Yeah, it's well, like I said, you're caught between trying to meet the standards that they require, and you know, having the ability to put that many people on. I've seen it two different ways for this year. As part of the stimulus, the COPS program is a 3-year hiring. They waived all the matching for that at the local level, and they've done the same for SAFER. I've seen 2 years. They'll waive the matching for the first 2, and they'll waive the matching for the first 4, and I haven't seen anybody really, since the guidelines haven't come out, no one's been able to confirm one way or the other, but it would still be a year 5 situation. And I don't know what, I know a couple of the other departments I've dealt with, we sat down and looked at their overall financials, and, you know, in a smaller situation like yours, you have somebody out, you know, either vacation or Kelly Day or otherwise, if you end up bringing somebody back on overtime, we've used the argument that if we had somebody else on shift, we'd reduce the overtime costs, actually. I know a department, they're spending $150,000 a year in overtime, and by having the SAFER grant, they could actually keep that. And they got their council to agree that, yes, we're going to put this money away. We're going to leave it in the budget as is, put the money away in a bank account. So as SAFER pays less and less, they'll pull back out of the bank account over the 5 years. And eventually, by the end of the 5 years, they won't have to adjust their budget, and hopefully the economy would be back.
The other thing is, it's hard for the mayor or any politicians to decide on a five-year plan, because here, you know, they get elected for 4 years. So it's, you know, they don't like to have their hands tied for that period of time. It makes it kind of tough. When I first came on, we had there was federal funding for CETA program. And that was just, if you weren't working, the only problem with the CETA program was you were hiring unemployed people. They didn't necessarily be on our list. So they had to take a test. Now, we're a civil service department. We'd have an opening for a permanent firefighter. CETA fireman would take the test. He would not score high enough. Well, we would hire a permanent fireman, and we would keep that CETA. He could stay for 2.5-3 years. Plus, when I came on the job, it was $8,000 a year. We couldn't exceed $10,000. So we had to physically repress our salaries for 3 years to do it. But it was a little bit easier to swallow because you weren't tying your hands for 5 years. The money was given to you. Maybe they found that there were excesses someplace and problems, and that's why they did away with that kind of funding.
Yeah. And Ken, you had something along those lines?
Well, yeah, just similarly with the bigger departments. We've got a pending 2008 SAFER. We've been doing the tap dance for a few months because we're waiting for the governor and the legislature to get along in the state before we see what our city budget is. But we're sitting with 18 firefighter positions on a pending SAFER grant right now. It's about a $5 million package, but when you look at the math, about $3 million of that falls on the city. And it kind of takes us to a new strategic level. We're adding on some ALS engine companies and expanding our services, you know, to meet our growing need. But that is, you know, the first 2 years looks really great. The last three, it dwindles down. And that's the game. You understand that. But, as a lot of this money filters down with the stimulus packages and stuff, it will be interesting to see what happens with SAFER. To the original question on the assistance grants, we're in the 20% match bracket. And last year, I know we were real fortunate. We hit just shy of $1 million grant we'd put in. But the 20% match, it basically covered we put in for turnout gear and then a bunch of equipment, basically. And the 20% match matched the turnout gear. Well, it's $200,000, and it seems like a lot of money, but to echo what was said, it's stuff you're going to have to buy anyway. So I think the key thing is, you got to have your political people out working the council so that they understand, you're paying for this either way, so it's pennies on the dollar. And I was just going to kind of echo on those comments.
Yeah. I think with Brian, you don't have, like you said, you want to avoid the T word out in your area, so you're probably more reflective of what most departments in the country have to deal with. I've talked to some other areas where they've managed to get their county on board. Because certainly, with your size of a budget, when you go after a truck or you go after anything significant, your tax funding is, going out to the bills and just trying to keep the doors open and the heat on and fuel in the trucks. A lot of departments do have to go out and think about extra fundraisers or things like that, which are allowed. A lot of one of the misconceptions people have with AFG is that you have to have cash in the bank. And as you said, you guys are a very supportive department and know you guys have the needs and you're putting the effort into it. Has it ever held you back looking at how much money it might cost to take something on and really make you think about whether or not you had to do it?
In terms of our AFG projects, no. Of course, the USDA system has been really good to us. And some years back, we were funded for an engine out of that, and it paid 75%. We were able to handle the 25%. Well, that program has now been reduced to where you're only funded for, I guess you receive a 45 or 55% grant funds, which really changes the complexion of things, especially now where we're considering another engine. So you're looking at all the new emission standards and stuff, the things have gotten expensive anyway, and even for a pretty basic two-door commercial, you're talking $200,000 plus. So you're still looking at a six-figure project on our end, and that's a lot. That's the equivalent of a couple years' full budget. And as you said, plenty of other considerations that have to be dealt with before we can start making a truck payment. We've got a good political climate right now. Matter of fact, the president of our board of directors and a founding member of our department is our county commissioner right now. and we've got a county judge in who has a business background and understands the value of the multiplier effect that grants can get you. And so, for one thing, we've never had to ask the county for any money to fund any of our grants, and for another, we're independent as a private incorporation that's contracted essentially by the county to provide the fire service. But the judge, our county judge executive, has been very supportive on our pursuit of any kind of grant we can go after. He's always glad to come out and shake hands and take pictures and all that kind of thing to show support for the projects that everybody in the county has been funded for. We have 13 fire departments here in the county. So we've got a good climate, and but as you said, yeah, there are certain things that we are restricted on. Fortunately, being that 5% bracket, it's never held us back on AFG. So we're very fortunate that the cost share is at that level, because that's what keeps us in the game, basically.
Yeah. Well, one last thing to wrap up with each of you, and you know, we appreciate you everybody coming out and sharing our stories. And we are just about 20 days to the deadline here, May 20th, 5 o'clock Eastern is the AFG deadline. And a lot of people, unfortunately, especially in my realm where I'm dealing with a lot of states and writing a lot of grants, we end up with, you know, I've been in 16 years of volunteer myself, and I'm guilty just as everybody else with the wait until the last minute syndrome sometimes. But real quick, Chief Sabo, how long did it take on average for you to come up with enough information to think where you had enough to get yourself a competitive grant, a grant application, and get it together?
Yeah, it usually takes me that, you know, that month period that I write through it. But it prior to that, you've got to do your homework. I mean, it's going to grant seminars. I try to reach out to whatever. I actually attended one of Brian's seminars at an air pack company down in my area, and just trying to see what you have to offer or what the AFG grant supervisor has to offer to find where to plug in what you can do. In doing your homework, finding out what you want to go for, getting some basic prices and everything, that takes place long before the AFG grant even is announced. I mean, if you kind of wait until they come out and say, hey, April 15th, it's open, you're behind the eight ball now, because everybody's trying to get information. Everybody's trying to write it. So you really have to do it. I would say that it's probably not a solid 3 months, but it's 3 months of research, writing it, and getting it set. And then, you know, almost preparing it for next year.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Rome wasn't built in a day, and that's as everything's getting more competitive. Like you said, everybody's learning a little bit more about how to do this, so the competition's improving. So, of course, everybody's got to improve to keep staying in the money. And, Brian, you probably got a little less overhead to go through to as far as getting permissions and things like that to even apply. What's about your average lead time?
I think we really start planning each year's grant as soon as we get a Dear John letter on the previous year's grant, because in light of that, you know, you start thinking then, okay, is this a weakness in the cost amount, or is this a weakness in project design? And if it doesn't seem to be a quality project, then that's when we start to reconsider and think about it. In terms of the data gathering, it's fairly straightforward. By the end of the year, of course, we're ready to tally up run totals and have that stuff on hand and start soliciting quotes and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's a couple months, and I'm, as a rule for our own grants, where I'm inside the department, I tend to get a little verbose, and the narratives tend to get a little long, and so I take a pretty deliberate approach to writing the narrative for my own department. When I'm helping the other guys here in the county, it's a little easier because I'm not as overwhelmed with information because I don't have the personal experience with them, and they go a little easier. But for ours, I like to kind of let it mature slowly and work through it over a period of, you know, at least a month. And we've generally got the project in mind and planned out by probably February of each year. And then once the program guidance finally shows up, we might make some changes there. For example, we spent 3 days, I guess, with no electricity at our station after the ice storm. Nothing to run it but a portable generator that was not automatic and all that stuff. Thought, okay, well, everybody's going to be putting in for a generator this year until the PGE comes out and says, well, that's a lowest station modification priority. So then you punt and you look at something else. but it's just about year-round. There is, as a couple of other comments have indicated, there's always somebody that you can learn from. You just try to assimilate all that stuff along the way and just keep everything up to date. You know, look at your needs, take a step back, spend some time on inventory. You're talking about turnout gear. You know, go through and look at those manufacture dates on the labels inside the coat, and you may have a pretty big surprise. When we got our PPE grant in 2003, we found a coat with a manufacture date in 88. So it's a 15-year-old coat that we had on a guy. And I don't think anybody really realized how old some of the stuff was getting. So self-awareness and really conducting inventories and assessments and planning and all that stuff, kind of having a priority list of the operational deficiencies like we talk about in the seminars and so forth. You know, what's the most pressing thing you have, and then which of those is going to score the highest with AFG? But it's a continuous process. The hands-on stuff, probably 2-3 months, but, you know, being prepared for that, 95% of it happens before that, and it's just the assembly that goes on in that period of time.
Yeah. And, Ken, you probably got having the largest department, you probably got the most vertical hierarchy there of approvals. You might have to start earlier than some. I know a few of the larger departments we have that where it may start out in a low spot, but everybody's got to take a peek at it on the way up, which, of course, you know, double-checking and making sure everything is accurate is important. What's your time variance been? As I said, you work with different size departments in the area. What's been your experience as far as timelines?
Big ships turn slowly, and I think I start talking about it early in the year, and people smile at me and nod and acknowledge that we should probably be talking about it. It's kind of a persistence thing for my position in the organization with lots of chief-level officers above me with lots of other things going on, and you're trying to, you know, let them know there's deadlines on this. And really, we ramp up about January, talking about where we're at. And I start the process of, you know, getting prices. A lot of times it's things where we can get guesstimates, or I've got people where I can call and get quick prices. To not discourage anyone that's listening on smaller departments, I know I've written grants in as little as a couple of days. And for departments at the very last minute, you know, they need turnout gear. And, you know, we kind of know where turnout gear is cost-wise, and they've got, you know, a 5% match, so they know they can cover it. You can, if you didn't start already, it's not too late. You got, you know, a few weeks, and you can and you can get a grant out there. My biggest thing is also, and the previous person said it, was prioritizing. Last year we got down and kind of developed a grant wish list at St. Paul, and it was all these different people, just anything under the sun. What do you want? And then we can kind of look as the different grants come down the pike and see what things fit into those different grant pockets. And that's helped us out a lot to kind of focus activities. What I see in a lot of real small departments that I've written for is, or I train with, I'll go in and they'll get an AFG for $50,000 in technical rescue equipment. And they run maybe 30 calls a year and have no high angle rescue capabilities, but they've got the ropes. But yet their people are in just shreds for turnout gear, or, you know, it's a real lack of priority, and it's because those rope things were important to the person who stepped up and wrote the grant. And you got to look at the funding matrixes, what gets the highest points. Obviously, you know, personal protective equipment, any sort of training that goes along with that. And as you look at those priorities, then take it to the next step. You know, if we're writing for turnout gear, let's replace all the turnout gear, and let's get a washer extractor with it, and let's include some training and incorporate training and safety and survival training with that, because those additional components, while it's a little more work for you, you actually increase your chances of having a successful grant. Beyond that, I think the other biggest part of the thing is realize that you can kind of see the differences in all of our departments. Understand who's reading these project narratives. You know, if you can fill in all the blanks and have accurate information, the computer will push you forward to that to the review committees. Know that you're going to have people that work on islands or people that work in rural Kentucky reading your grant, and, you know, maybe a person in Alabama has no clue what you're talking about in Minnesota with cold weather issues. So you got to have different people around the country, maybe that you have as resources, even family members, whatever you got. Get a few different sets of eyes to look at that narrative and catch your slang, catch things that, you know, the untrained person, if they ask a question about an acronym, well, you should probably spell that acronym out then, because somebody's got a question on it. So that's the biggest thing, is whatever resources you can have, you know, put it out there and then listen to that feedback that you get and just kind of keep honing your art.
definitely good advice from everybody. Gentlemen, we appreciate you coming out for this again and sharing your stories and your experiences and your advice. And good luck to all of you and your departments. And stay safe. And hopefully we'll see some see you guys up on the grant awards list again.
There you go.
Thank you. Stay safe, guys.
Thanks.
This presentation is proudly sponsored by Plimovent. Plimovent is a driving force in advancing firefighter health and safety. Plimovent's diesel exhaust removal systems feature virtually 100% source capture to eliminate diesel exhaust from your firehouse. Plimovent diesel exhaust removal systems meet the requirements stated in the Fire Act Grant Program guidance for modifications to facilities and have been recognized as a high priority in this year's grants. Visit www.plimovent.com or click the link on this page to learn more about their exhaust removal systems.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.